another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for listening. You can learn more about Hope at investinghope.com. You can read our blog there. You can listen to this podcast at investinghope.com, also on iTunes and Podbeam. And we'll have this show up online hopefully tomorrow so you can listen. Today I am joined, as I am oftentimes, I'm joined by a guest, and that guest today is Stephanie Gray. And today what we're going to do is we're going to talk about being pro-life and what that looks like across the board. But Stephanie, before we bring her in, I do want to give a quick introduction. Stephanie is an international speaker who began presenting at the age of 18, has given over 800 pro-life presentations. Most recently, Stephanie spoke at Talks at Google, where the video has gone viral, over 100,000 views so far. And so, Stephanie, thank you so much for taking out some time to join us today.
Thank you, Andrew, for having me on.
Awesome. Well, I know that you're not from the South, so hopefully my accent doesn't it allows you to understand at least what we're trying to say. So
I am from the far north.
I know. So, well, we certainly are blessed to have you on today, and I do want to quickly, if we can, start with, you know, as I was reading up on, you know, of course, I was introduced to you through the Google video, and watched that, and then that, you know, I started looking at other things, and as I was researching you, my first thought was, what made an 18-year-old decide, you know what, I'm going to start speaking out on the issue of life and abortion and be bold in that? And so if you could give us a background of what got you into the pro-life movement to begin with.
Sure. Well, you know, really, I mean, the very beginning was my family life. My parents really walked the talk and lived the gospel by serving and helping the less fortunate and having a strong sense of justice. So they were very active in the pro-life movement. My mom volunteered at a pregnancy center. So from a very young age, I was exposed to the topic of abortion and to the reality that my parents were trying to do something to protect the vulnerable. Then I would say the next kind of step in my journey that was really pivotal was when I was in my first year of college in Western Canada. A American speaker actually was brought up to Canada to speak at a pro-life conference for college students. And I was blown away by this presenter by the name of Scott Klusendorf. Mm-hmm. And he so logically and reasonably and gracefully articulated the pro-life perspective using science, using philosophy, that not only was I better equipped to be able to talk to my friends, but I thought, oh my goodness, I think the Holy Spirit is convicting my heart that I need to do what this man does. And so then the next step really was finishing my degree and prayer and discernment, and really just seeing as you live the present moment each day, what doors open up and what doors close. And the Lord just kept opening doors in the direction of speaking. And so I went 3 more years finishing my degree. And then when I graduated, it just was very clear that I was meant to work full-time in the pro-life movement as an educator. And that was about 18 years ago.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's amazing what God can do through that. As you hear about, and I think it's important to note that that it wasn't hearing Scott wasn't you went from pro-choice to pro-life. It was just further cementing inside of you, hey, this is what I believe in using logic to explain my beliefs has a huge impact. It had a huge impact on you, and obviously continues to have a huge impact as we have those conversations. So from there, you co-founded the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. Now, mm-hmm. in that work, let's talk about that for a second. What was the focus there? And in co-founding that, what kind of impacts did you see across the board?
Yeah, so that was something that I did start with a group of other young Canadians in 2002. And the idea was to take the apologetics for the pro-life perspective that this speaker, Scott Klusendorf, had so eloquently developed, and blend that with another approach that we had also observed in the United States, which was from a pro-life leader named Greg Cunningham, which was looking at the history of social reform movements like the civil rights movement or the abolitionist movement in Great Britain or the anti-child labor movement in the United States, and studying how those movements achieved cultural transformation. And that study led to the conclusion that a major part of cultural transformation in those historical fights involved the use of shocking imagery that right. exposed the injustice in order to prick the conscience of the culture. So myself and a group of Canadians created this nonprofit that took the approach of pictures and the approach of well-reasoned apologetics, blended them together, and created this ministry that I worked for 12 years. And I always had a sense that I was meant to really devote my skill set of speaking to the culture as much as possible, but that for a season I was meant to do more than my specific gifting and a gifting rather and build something that was larger than just my skill set. And so what we did was we developed more than just giving presentations and apologetics, is we developed a lot of projects and activism-based activity where pro-lifers were trained in apologetics, but then they would engage the culture at large, whether on public street corners, whether at high schools, whether at college campuses. And so a lot of the stories that I told in my talk at Google that you heard, a lot of what's in my book is based on, you know, the 12 years of one-on-one conversations that I have had with people trying to convince them abortion is wrong while learning where they're coming from and how their own life experience had led them to the conclusions that they had currently embraced. And so that direct cultural engagement really helped inform the theory, put it into practice, and help develop it to be as effective as possible. And so now I really focus on communicating that message that I really developed after all those years.
As we walk through the pro-life movement, I think it's important that listeners understand that there's a number of legs to the pro-life movement. And so you do have the policy arm, which in the states is more so the right to life folks who are working within each state and at a national level to bring about legislation and policy to eventually, obviously, find a place where abortion would become illegal in this country and around the world and other places. And then you have the arm of kind of what y'all were doing, what you did for 12 years of, and this is one where some people are okay. Some people, even within the pro-life movement, are, well, I don't know if that's a good approach, if that's the approach we need to take. And I've sat down and met with folks that are doing that here in the States. And so you have that arm of it of where you go to college campuses or street corners or different places and have pictures that will bring about conversation. That obviously is the hope. Sometimes it brings about other emotions, but the hope is that it gives us a point where we can have a conversation and say, this is what is happening. And then you have what we do on a day-to-day basis at Hope Resource Center, which is a pregnancy center operation where we are saying, look, we stand with the right to life folks. We stand with the pro-life movement. We're going to have conversations and do things with those people. But ultimately, what we believe our gifting is to bring about an opportunity for young moms and at times young dads to come into a place where they. I wrote a blog yesterday or last week about the original safe space, which in my I think is a pregnancy center, a place where young women can go when they find themselves in crisis and unplanned situations, and they can feel safe. And at our center here in Knoxville, Tennessee, we are able to. We have three nurse practitioners on staff. We have four nurses on staff, and so they're not sitting with me, a person that has a lot of opinions, but they're sitting with medical professionals who are also Christians, who are also pro-life, to have those conversations with. And so that's what I love about the pro-life movement is we are doing that work to say, look, there's a lot of avenues to go about this. The ultimate goal is that abortion would be unthinkable in a civilized society. In order for that to happen, it does need to be illegal. In order for that to happen, people do need to see what abortion is. In order for that to happen, people need to have an opportunity to sit down with medical professionals and be advised on the choices that are in front of them. And I think we do that well in all of those areas. And then you shifted focus, and maybe it's not a shift in focus necessarily, but you went to Love Unleashes Life. So let's talk a little bit about what Love Unleashes Life. What does that consist of?
Yes. So the main focus there is education and formation. And my tagline is really influence the influencers. Mm-hmm. And over the more recent years, you know, there's been growing opportunities for me to speak to at Bible colleges or seminaries to speak to medical students, to speak to law students, and I realized these people are going to be leading churches or running medical practices or, you know, potentially becoming judges or at the very least becoming lawyers, and they are in positions of influence. So what can I do with the knowledge I have, the experience I have, to take what I've learned and download it into the minds of these individuals, and they can then spread it to audiences I would never have direct access to. And I chose the title, Love Unleashes Life, which I also chose for my book, because through my encounters with so many people in the culture, debating with them on the topic of abortion, over time, more people would reveal to me their personal stories, where they were coming from, that maybe they'd have been abused, maybe they were raised in an unhealthy environment, maybe they were in and out of foster care, maybe one of their loved ones committed suicide. And as all of this began to be shared to me, I started to realize that I believe the Lord had drawn me to encounter them, not only to try to communicate about who the baby was and what abortion did to the baby, but to meet them where they were at and be Christ to them and love them as much as I love the babies. And so when sometimes in those encounters I would set aside the arguments on abortion in order to just hear their story and ask how they're doing and see if they need help, I saw individuals who initially in the conversation had been maybe hostile, bitter, angry, swearing, yelling, whatever. As time went on and I started to listen more to their story and be empathetic towards them, I saw them soften and I saw them become quieter in their tone of voice and to be more receptive. And that kind of brought to life the idea that love unleashes life. When someone is loved, when they sense that we, in encountering them, really will their good. It's not an agenda. It's wanting what's best for them as much as we want what's best for everyone else. That does something to the spirit of another individual. It can literally unleash life in terms of if a pregnant woman experiences love, for example, at your center, well, she can change her mind on abortion and unleash the life of her child. But then figuratively, loving someone can unleash spiritual life and that sense of greater happiness and fulfillment knowing that they're cared for.
Yeah, and I think as we walk through these conversations, and I'm just to give you a quick background on kind of how I got to this situation. I've been pro-life my entire life, but I was a political science major and very vocal and opinionated and always seeking that debate and always seeking wins and not really looking at those that disagreed with me as people, but instead looking at them as pawns, I guess, is for lack of a better word, and saying, how can I beat them in this argument? And what God shifted in my heart was to say, look, there's a reason why they disagree with you, and so let's have a conversation about that, and not get angry, not be bitter, not see them as the enemy, but see them as an image bearer that has value, even though they may disagree with my viewpoint. And see if we can come to a common place. And that's what I liked about your speech at Google is it appeared, even with the questions after your speech, that there were people on both sides going, maybe there is some common ground here. Let's start there and then see if maybe that'll penetrate further. And it appears, and I believe, obviously, that it will. And we're about to take a break, and then we'll get into some more of that when we come back. But an interesting conversation as we walk through our life ethic and what that means from womb to the tomb. We'll be back in a sec.
So we say, only your blood, cover all, cover all.
And we're back. It's Andrew Wood with Hope Resource Center, joined today by Stephanie Gray, speaker, author, and Canadian, and certainly glad that you have joined us today. So we finished up the last segment talking about seeing people as image bearers and actual people, and it, at a point going, look, issues matter greatly. I mean, we all care and are passionate about issues, but people matter more than issues. And if we get people right, the issues will be right, in my opinion, eventually at some point, in having those conversations. So as you've made your rounds around the around this country, around the world, and had your, you know, been speaking and your interactions with people of like mind and with people that disagree with you, what have you seen to be the most, I guess if you could just share a story, and I'm sure there's a host of stories that you could share, of a time where you had an opportunity to sit down with someone that was in every way opposed to what we stand for. And then after that conversation, you saw a shift, maybe not a complete reversal, but a shift of them going, hold on, maybe I need to think more about the issue of life and abortion.
Yeah, you know, what comes to mind is, even as you share all that about really seeing people as image bearers, is that while we want to win an argument, as we ought when it comes to matters of truth, we also need to desperately want to win the person. And we really have to aspire to do both, win the person and then, as you say, win the argument. And what comes to mind is that, as you pointed out, yeah, often it starts with winning the person, and then the winning the argument will follow. And I think of a story where a student I call Pete, it was not his real name, but he came up to me on a college campus where I was at a pro-life exhibit, and he said that he didn't think the preborn child was a person. And so we began dialoguing, and, you know, I was asking questions and making analogies and, in my mind, making a really good case for the preborn child being a human scientifically, and making a reasonable case philosophically that they ought to be protected as persons by virtue of being humans. Nothing was getting through to him. And one thing I noticed is Pete kept focusing on suffering. And if someone's going to suffer, then we need abortion. So I finally just said to him, Pete, do you know anyone who suffered a lot? And then his eyes fired up at that point. He said, yeah, me. He said, my mom was brutally abused by her husband. At one point, she had to run away from him and live on the street. She tried to raise my brother and I under this abusive environment for a time. Yeah, he said, I know a thing or two about suffering. And in that moment, it was like scales fell from my eyes. And I realized, you know, his resistance to the logic that I had been putting forth was not grounded in the fact that I wasn't doing a good job explaining it. It's that he was coming from a place of suffering and woundedness where he didn't want another child to experience the suffering that he had experienced, to grow up in a home like he had grown up in. He was wrong that abortion was the solution to that problem, but he was right that that's a problem, and he was right that no one should be raised in an environment of conflict like he endured. And so then I started asking him less about abortion and more about how he was doing now and how his mom was. And, you know, then he shared the good news. Oh, well, you know, my mom's doing really well. She's got a good job, you know. And I pointed out, you know, my observation. I said, well, look at you. Here you are at university. That's really great. And then I just, it must obviously the Holy Spirit, but I was convicted to ask him, you know, what gives him joy? Because one of the things I noticed about Pete was that he was very low. His spirits were low. He almost seemed quite depressed, not animated, hard to reach, really. And so when I asked him what gave him joy, his first answer was to say, when I'm sitting in front of my TV with a big bag of chips and I stick my hand in those chips and I stuff my face. You know, and he was kind of like deadpan as he was saying it, and I was like, you can't be serious, but you don't act like you're joking, you know? And so I thought, well, I'm just going to be fun and flirtatious, and I kind of like threw my hand out and I said, oh, come on, Pete, when are you fulfilled? And then he went quiet, and again, no emotion, no expression on his face, and then he broke the silence by saying, when I'm sleeping. And I really sensed that that was not a joke, that that was his honest-to-goodness answer. And my heart broke at that moment because I thought about my own answer for when I'm fulfilled. And I thought about music and my family and my friends and being out in the outdoors and so many things which fulfill me, my faith, my relationship with Christ. And his answer is when he's unconscious, when he's cut off from the world, when he's separated from all that is true and good and beautiful. And I then said to him, you know, Pete, if you could have access to any money, because he had told me he did not have much means, so I said, if you could have access to any money to go anywhere and do anything, what would you do? And it was just a sense that I had to help him dream. And interestingly, in that moment, he suddenly got animated. And it was like a light bulb went off in his mind, and he kind of lit up. And then he said, I would go to Africa, and I would kill all the warlords, and I would take everything back and give it back to the poor people. And my immediate reaction was to say, Pete, that's fantastic. And I said, I'm not sure about the warlord part, but Pete, I said, what this shows me is that from your own experience of suffering, you know what it's like to be a victim of injustice. You know what it's like to be bullied, and you empathize with people in that situation. And I said, that's good, Pete. And then I started talking about, you know, what he could do to go on a volunteer vacation and what he was doing to try to help the less fortunate. And our conversation turned from abortion to him, and yet he transformed before my very eyes as a result of that encounter, because I think he truly sensed she cares about me. She does care about these babies, but she cares right. about me too.
You know, and that's, I think that's a part of our narrative and our message that for some it's been missed. And part of that is because the overarching narrative has been one of pro-lifers are extremists and nut jobs and just crazy people. And so the media helps with that, and lobbyists help with that. But the truth is, we care deeply. care deeply about people. We care deeply about our neighbors. I mean, if we claim to be Christian, then the very claim that we are making, we are instructed then to love our God with all our heart, soul, and mind, and love our neighbor as ourselves. I mean, we are commanded to do that. I spoke at a church recently, and a young lady walked up to me afterwards and said, I've been pro-choice my entire life. And now I'm rethinking everything. And it was because I didn't sit up on, it wasn't because I had the perfect method. It was just, I didn't sit up on the stage condemning those that disagreed with me. I simply said, look, the reason that I am pro-life is because my God created people in his image. And so if I mm-hmm. believe that to be true, then even those that disagree with me strongly are image bearers and have value. And certainly the baby inside the womb is an image bearer and has value. But the mom that is struggling, that's carrying him or her, it has value and deserves my attention. And so it's always, but the problem a lot of times is we're not willing to have that conversation. There are some on our side that aren't willing to have the conversation, and there are certainly those on the other side that are not right. willing to have that conversation. If we're not willing to sit down with each other and say, okay, let's hash this out, let's talk about this. You know, there's an article in CBS News just this week saying that now they're saying babies can distinguish between languages inside the womb, inside of the womb.
Right.
And so I'm going, okay, so now we believe that in the third trimester, a baby can distinguish between the native language of his mother and someone else's foreign language. And they can tell by the heart rate, they can tell all of this. And I'm going, okay, so what we've been saying all along, that's life inside the womb. A blob of cells isn't going to distinguish. You know, just some pieces of tissue may not distinguish language, but life is certainly going to distinguish
yeah.
language. And so it's interesting when we get to have those conversations, and it's even better when science catches up to what we know to be true. And when we come back, Stephanie, what I want to do is talk about how the opportunity to speak at Google occurred, and what have you seen since then? What have you seen? Have you seen an impact? Have you seen a shift? Have you seen even more people on the other side reaching out and saying, okay, maybe we do need to sit down and have this conversation? We'll talk about that when we come back. And we're back. It's Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center, joined today by Stephanie Gray. Thank you so much for taking some time out. Thank you for listening as well. So Stephanie, you had an opportunity to speak at a little place called Google, right? And so how did that come about? When did they reach out to you? Did your people reach out to them? How did you get the opportunity to speak there?
Yes, you know, earlier this year, one of their staff members who is familiar with my work contacted me and basically told me about their program, which I wasn't even aware of at the time, called Talks at Google, which are similar to TED Talks,
right,
where they bring in people to speak on a whole range of topics specifically to their staff. They run this 5 days a week. Sometimes there's a couple of Talks at Google talks a day. And then generally most of those talks get loaded to Google's YouTube channel. And when the staff member approached me to see if I'd be interested in being proposed as a presenter, I said, well, of course, I'd love to, but what are the odds that, you know,
right,
they'll
right.
be interested? And then I started looking into all the speakers they'd brought in, and I saw, well, actually, they brought in Tim Keller and Francis Chan. Now, of course, they also brought in Cecil Richards of Planned Parenthood,
sure.
But what it showed me was, wow, the far left, the right, the middle, you know, it's all there. So I thought, maybe they will. And I thought, ultimately, if the Lord wants this, you know, I'll move forward, but it's going to be His hand that makes this happen. And so I said, absolutely, put, you know, suggest me. Here's how I would frame it. Here's how I recommend proposing it. And long story short, it was readily approved, and I gave the presentation in April, and it was loaded onto their channel in June, which is what caused, you know,
right,
all the internet hype over the last month.
And so since speaking there, and I'll just let you know, we're going to have a we have in services with our staff periodically, and we have one coming up, and we're just going to sit there, and I've already seen the video, but the staff's going to watch the video together, because I do think it's important that we hear from logical presenters about the issue of life. And so I do appreciate that, and the staff will certainly learn and grow from hearing that. So since that has occurred, and now, you know, at least in the pro-life world, you know, different websites have picked up on it, and Facebook people have been sharing it and talking about it. What have you seen? Have you seen fruit come of that? Have you seen maybe some folks that are against what you're doing come at you in a negative way? What's kind of been the process since they uploaded that video in June? I know I saw one headline that was like, you know, Stephanie Gray's video is doubling Cecile Richards' video. And I was like, of course, they got to make it a competition. But but what have you seen since that video has been uploaded?
Definitely a lot of good fruit in terms of just the message itself being heard and watched by so many. And that was my prayer in all of this, that it, you know, would be a platform for the Lord to get this message out to people who wouldn't ordinarily hear it. I've actually been in an email exchange with someone who is pro-abortion, but to give them credit, they watched the presentation and said, you know, I want to tell you my specific perspective and have you respond to it. So I responded, and then he responded. So I, you know, have to develop a response to that. So there's that kind of dialogue happening. Of course, I've been getting, you know, some very encouraging feedback from people. And, of course, what's most important to me is that if someone says they like it, that they do something with it. And so I can think
right.
of one message where a gentleman messaged me and said, you know, great talk. He goes, but specifically, I want you to know that I dialogue with people all the time, and this is going to make me more effective. And already I've been able to incorporate what you've done, the approaches you've talked about, asking questions, making analogies, you know, to make my encounters more fruitful. So that's really encouraging to me. And then certainly doors are opening to speak to audiences that I haven't yet spoken to, including, I'm most excited, I have to say, my dad is from Scotland, and I just got a request to speak in Scotland.
Oh,
so I'm
awesome.
Excited to be able to take the pro-life message across the pond. And to think that that's really thanks to Google.
You know, it's an amazing thing that, you know, that's where we are as a society. And I would love to see more of that. Just an opportunity. You know, I do respect Google for saying, look, we'll have people from all different walks come speak. You know, I think that's fair. I think that gives you the opportunity. That gives folks on our side the opportunity, folks on the other side to have the opportunity to speak on issues that they're passionate about. And it's not,
right.
At times I think we act as if it's just black and white. And certainly we believe life. I mean, I wouldn't be in the work that I'm in if I didn't believe this was the issue that will define my generation, the millennial generation. But I do also understand that there are some people that come at it from a different angle. Now, I'm going to disagree with them, it's important to understand that they are able to have that viewpoint. And then, okay, let's have a discussion. Let's have a dialogue on that. I'm always telling people that I speak to is, look, you say you're pro-life, but you need to wrestle with that in your own mind. Why are you pro-life? Are you able to articulate why you stand for life and what that looks like and what that means. So when that conversation does present itself, you have the words at hand. So as you make your travels and have these different interactions, do you believe, and I know this is a heavy question, but do you believe that we will see, that we are in the process of seeing that pendulum start to swing in the direction of life, where people are starting to go, you know what, maybe more restrictions on abortion with legislation is something that we need to do. Maybe this isn't a progressive mindset. Maybe this is a danger and a destruction place to be in terms of abortion. What are you seeing with as you have your conversations? I think at times pro-lifers feel beat down, and we struggle to celebrate wins, and we often have a lot of wins, but we tend to focus on the negatives and focus on the losses. But what are you seeing that could encourage and boost, give kind of some boost to those that will hear this that are pro-life?
Yeah, I definitely see a positive shift happening, without a doubt. I have spoken to so many people in those types of conversations where I'm asking, what do you think about abortion? Why do you support abortion? Under what circumstances would you not support abortion? Those open-ended questions and the back-and-forth dialogue, I have seen people do a 180 in 30 minutes, where at the beginning of that time frame they were in favor of abortion. By the end, some of them have explicitly said, you just changed my mind. In other cases, they're like, okay, I don't have an answer. I need to think about this. In other cases, you at least know they've been provoked to thought, even if they're not verbalizing that. So I think one of the benefits I have in my work that not everyone has in my travels, meeting so many people and having these conversations, is I'm getting that direct feedback that gives me hope. So rather than, you know, being negative and despairing, yeah, there definitely are some major problems in the world, don't get me wrong, and we still have a big battle on our hands. But I am seeing people not only change their minds, but of course, being a person of faith, we know the end of the story. We know that God's in charge, that He writes straight with our crooked lines, that whatever mess we make, He'll redeem it and bring good from it. And in all situations, we should just be praying, Lord, may Your glory be shown. Show Your glory, show Your glory. And He is.
Yeah, and as we have these conversations and dialogues, I think, you know, I get frustrated at times when I hear people say, well, we just can't, we're not seeing any fruit, we're not seeing any movement. I get emails all the time from pro-life groups of, you know, we're struggling, we can't keep the lights on, we're doing this, we're doing that. And I'm going, look, we need to step back for a second and really look at the wins. We need to look at the abortion numbers are on the decline. We need to look at legislation that's being passed. We have, at least in the States, we have conservative governors and legislators across this country that are making a lot of movement. Now, some of those pieces of legislation are being dealt with in the courts, but at least we're there. We're at that process. Right. And you know, then with Gorsuch here on the Supreme Court, and we're moving in the direction that way. But I do think what we're seeing is, I mean, at Hope, we see 10 to 15 patients a day, Monday through Friday, and we get together every morning, we pray over our patient list, and every day, as we're praying over that list, there is at least one person on that list, if not multiple people on that list, that are very much abortion-minded. They may even already have an abortion scheduled. We have some patients that come to us, and we say, how did you hear about us? And they say, I was actually referred to you by Planned Parenthood. Now, that doesn't happen often, but when it happens, we celebrate those moments. Right, we don't immediately go, well, man, that awful, you know, obviously we have our opinions about the abortion clinic. But if God is even using someone within that facility to send people to us, then we say amen to that. And so I think as pro-lifers, what we have to do is get to a place of we don't need to be comfortable necessarily, but we need to be at a point where we're saying, look, we are on the winning side. If we believe we are on the winning side, then let's run with that. And that's what I love about what you had to say at Google and what I'm seeing a trend. I met with executive directors a couple weeks ago from the state of Tennessee at pregnancy centers. And I'm seeing a trend of people finally getting to the point of saying, Now, this is good. We celebrate these wins, and we're doing a lot of good work. So if somebody's listening to this today and they say, man, I'd love to connect with what Stephanie's doing, how can they learn more about you? How can they get your book? How can they hear and see different presentations that you're giving?
Yeah, so if people just go to loveunleasheslife.com, that's loveunleasheslife.com. It has information about my book, my blog, my upcoming schedule, so that if I happen to be nearby, someone can come and hear me in person. So, and then from there also you can click to my YouTube channel, which has a variety of different talks I've given, as well as, of course, there's the link to the talk at Google presentation. So once again, that's loveunleasheslife.com.
Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it, and we'll be praying for your work. And let us know if there's ever anything we can do in Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll be happy to help.
Thank you, Andrew, and keep up your wonderful work on the front lines.
All right, talk to you soon. Thanks, Stephanie.
God bless. Bye.
And that was Stephanie Gray, who is an author, speaker, presenter, and just doing amazing work, not just here in this country, but around the world. And so we are thankful for her. Go and find that video. All you got to do is Google pro-life speech at Google. So Google pro-life speech at Google, and you will see Stephanie's presentation. And I think your pro-life ethic will be you'll be encouraged, and it will help you in having conversations with folks. We'll be back in a second.
Know where the road is, but we're having fun.
What a great conversation we had today with Stephanie Gray, author, speaker, and just a pro-life advocate all over the world. And so we are thankful for her. And so we are thankful that we have an opportunity to make impacts, whether that impact is occurring with a person next to you on a plane, a person next to you on the bus, a person next to you in the cubicle next to you at work, whatever that looks like. Maybe it's the person down the hall that you live with. Are you having those conversations? Are you having conversations that are celebrating life, that are talking about the gift that is life? And folks, the biggest goal of this show every week is to encourage you, is to obviously point you to hope and partnering with us there, but also to equip you to have those conversations. And that's why we have the guests that we have. That's why we had Stephanie on today. That's why we had the president of Students for Life on a couple weeks ago, and that's why we'll continue to have guests as long as this show is on, so that you can be equipped to have the conversations that you need to have to celebrate life. We thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Talk to you soon.
Lift your head.